Just a repeat of the announcement, those who wish to listen to this class in Tamil can go upstairs to third floor. In the Tamil, the Bhagavad Gita and the slogan of the Tamil and the third floor, the Guruva and the Mural Mani, the Poikarma. Okay, this word, in the purport, Prabhupada emphasizes, in the second part of the purport, Prabhupada emphasizes on the parampara system. So what is parampara system? Parampara system is the system whereby knowledge is transmitted from a master, from a spiritual master to a disciple. So this knowledge of transmitting downwards from the spiritual master to disciple is a prime characteristic of a parampara system. Now, in this verse, Prabhupada mentions that parampara system is the only way, is the way by which we can understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this point we have to understand. Why? Why is this mentioned? So to understand all this, we will look a bit on how knowledge is actually transmitted or how we can acquire knowledge. So there are two kinds of processes, by which we are able to attain knowledge. One is called Aroha and the other is called Avaroha. Aroha means ascending process of knowledge and Avaroha means descending process. And descending process is what is characterized in parampara system. So descending process is whereby the spiritual master will tell the disciple this is what it is, this is what he's supposed to do and all that is. And Aroha system is where we try and find out through our own means. So knowledge is attained by three avenues. One is by direct perception of through our senses. By our direct sensory perception, we are able to understand something. We can see that this carpet here is red in color. So that is knowledge. We understood directly from our sensory perception. We understand, this Prabhu is wearing white color kurta, we understand. The second avenue by which we can understand as knowledge is by deduction. Suppose today I'm walking here and I saw a devotee walking towards the temple wearing dhoti and kurta and everything. We may not be coming directly to the temple, but we can understand Saturday evening, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, a devotee walking in Sangam Road in dhoti kurta, he must be coming for the program. So that is deductive knowledge. we understand by deduction, by analyzing and concluding based on certain facts and certain facts that we gather. The third type of avenue of receiving knowledge is actually by oral perception, shabda. So the three methods are direct perception or pratyaksha, second process is deduction, anumana, and third process is called shabda. Now, accepting process of knowledge, receiving knowledge through the accepting process is mainly characterized by the first two processes, first two avenues, by direct perception and by deduction. And this kind of process, we can understand. We are able to get some knowledge, gather some knowledge. Very simple things like this carpet is red, this person is here for the program. If someone asks, Prabhu, was Madan Mohan Prabhu here for program yesterday? Oh no, no, he was here. Oh yes, he was here. I saw him, yes. So that is direct perception. We are able to understand. Or sometimes someone will ask, what is Devaki Prabhu from India? He calls and asks, was Madan Mohan Prabhu was program? Yes, yes, he was. He accepts my word because I was here and I saw him there, and Devaki Prabhu accepts. That acceptance is called the third type. You accept on the basis of authority, on the basis of hearing from someone who has received this knowledge. So all these processes are there, but unfortunately accepting process of knowledge is flawed. Why is it flawed? It's because we have limitations. We ourselves have limitations. What are the limitations? There are four kinds. One, we have this tendency to commit mistakes. Two, we are illusions. Three, we have this propensity to cheat. And four, our senses are imperfect. Our senses are imperfect because we can understand that our eyes, for example, are imperfect. We can't see around the corner. We can't see what is beyond this wall. But sometimes even if we switch off this light, we can't see the hand in front of us. And when we are hearing, our hearing sense is also imperfect because sometimes we may not be able to hear things. There is this instrument called a dog whistle. And children like to play with it. And sometimes you take this dog whistle and blow and blow and blow, you won't hear anything. And you also very happy, you will blow and blow and blow. But if you have dogs around you, they will start making a ruckus because they cannot stand the noise. So this frequency by which this dog whistle is operating on is something we can't hear. So our hearing is also limited. So all these senses, we are limited by certain limitations to all this. And the fact that we can also be illusions. For example, if you see a rope on the floor, there are times when we think that it is not a rope but a snake. We can be fooled. Then the process of deductive knowledge, the process of gaining knowledge by deduction, it also can be flawed because sometimes our intelligence is also limited. We may not have all the knowledge, we may not have all the evidences and required knowledge to make a proper deduction. So we make a false kind of conclusion. And this deduction this process of deduction also can be flawed. This example, you may have heard this, about this experiment on a frog. That there was one scientist, he wanted to do some experiment on the frog. So he put a frog on the table and he asked the frog to jump. So the frog jumped. And after that he took the frog and he cut off one of the legs. And he asked the frog to jump. The frog now cut off the leg and he jumped. But not so far, but he jumped a little. Now he cut off both the legs and he asked the frog to jump. Now the frog, with a little bit more difficulty, started to jump. But he jumped a little bit more, little bit more. Now he took the frog and he cut off the third leg. Now the frog has only one leg, no? And he asked the frog to jump. Now the frog jumped. Very struggled so hard, but he jumped a little. He jumped. Now he took the frog and cut off all the legs. So now the frog has no leg. And he asked the frog to jump. Jump, jump, frog, jump. And the frog, he did not jump. How to jump? There's no leg. But the scientist, looking at the frog, jump.
Oh, the frog did not jump.
And he concluded in his logbook, a frog, when all the legs are removed from a frog, the frog will become dead. So this is the fallacy of deductive knowledge. Sometimes we try and conclude wrongly. So these two processes of acquiring knowledge by direct perception of the senses and by deductive knowledge are flawed. And this process of understanding from authority, from someone else is a much easier process of gaining knowledge. And as a child, we understand this very well. That a child, when he is told, oh, this is the teacher tell you, you listen. And the teacher will tell you, oh, 1 plus 1 is 2, the student will just accept it without any questioning. Will just accept it. They will not question, why is 1 plus 1 2, why cannot be 3? No, they will not question. And later on, when they go to higher level and everything, when you tell them 1 minus minus 1 is also 2, because the teacher is saying, the student will also accept. But then you will wonder, why is it 1 plus 1 equals 2, the other one equals 2, how can it be? You won't question, because the teacher is saying. So this point is very much appreciated when we were children. We understood and we accepted the words of the teacher without any questioning. But when it comes to the matter of spiritual understanding, we do not work in that way. We try to question, why? Why is it this way? Why is that way? But this process is as mentioned in the PowerPoint, this process of why and questioning through our own senses is not a very good proposition. Better to accept the authority of Krishna. Now why is it flawed that to understand Krishna through our sensory perception, through our deduction is difficult? Why is it flawed? It's because the subject matter by which we are trying to understand is Krishna. And Krishna is unlimited. Krishna is inconceivable, achintya. And because Krishna is considered the cause of everything. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, chapter 10, text 8, just few verses ago we heard that I am the cause of everything. Krishna is mentioning, I am the cause. So he is the cause, and we are trying to understand the cause of everything through our limited sense perception. Can we understand him? It's a bit difficult. It is extremely challenging. And this subject matter of someone supreme is actually logical. When we understand, when we look, when we try to understand by our own sensory perception, when we try to look around the mechanics of the universe, when we see the sun rising and setting at precise timing, when we see the earth orbiting around the sun, orbiting around itself, very nicely, producing day and night, producing everything nicely. When you see the sun working so nicely to produce rain and nourishing the vegetables, doing everything nicely, we find that, all these, there must be a creator, there must be an engineer. Just like we may have a car, a BMW car, very nice high-tech car, working very wonderfully. And we know that for the car to work very nicely, there must be a creator, there must be an engineer who must have designed the car very nicely. Oh, this thing must go there, the nut must go here, the carburetor must go there, all this must go there. The engineer will tell, this is the dimension, this is the specification, this is how we should be doing this. And then the car will become perfect machine. If not for the brain of the engineer, the car will not by chance happen to become a very beautiful piece of machinery. No, it is because there is a brain behind it. Similarly, the universe is running like clockwork. If you understand the sun is millions of miles away, and yet we are able to feel the heat of the sun. Sometimes you have one lamp down here, and you can't feel the heat of the lamp. So just imagine how powerful the sun must have been. There's this, I'm tracking a bit, but there's this story in Birba, Akbar and Birba, there's one incident. Akbar was the king, so one fine day he wanted to have a competition. So he asked his citizen if anybody could stay inside Ganges water, inside the Ganges overnight. So So at night it's actually very cold. The water becomes freezing. So the water is very cold, and Akbar is asking if anybody could stay in the water overnight, all night long. So a lot of people, they took up the challenge because the reward is good. Because the king is there, the reward is good. So Akbar came, many people came, and he said they all stood in the water. Many people dropped out except for this one yogi. He stood in underwater, almost submerged underwater, and he stayed until daybreak. And finally Akbar said, yes, you have won the competition, let me reward you. Just then the minister said, hold on. You see, across the Ganges River, you see that hut there? That hut is illuminated, inside the hut is illuminated by this oil lamp. You see that fire lamp? That oil lamp, that fire is burning there, and see, this yogi is taking the heat from that oil lamp. And therefore this competition is considered null and void. So Birbal heard this, Birbal did not say anything, he just kept quiet. So the poor yogi who stood underwater for one whole night did not get anything. So Birbal was thinking like this, never mind. So a few days later, Birbal invited Akbar and all the other ministers to lunch at his house. So he called them over, he came over, and then Birbal said, yes, please come sit down nicely. You just wait for a while, you just be prepared. You would almost die. And Birbal went inside the kitchen. And you could hear all the pots and pans, clashing. We have this experience also. You'll hear, pan, ding, chum, everything. And then after Birbal came, wait, he's coming. And like this, it happened for 2-3 hours. And Akbar and the minister, from the animated conversation that they had, suddenly became almost a muted incident. Nobody was talking because everybody was very hungry. After that, Akbar just stood up. Birbal, what are you doing? What is this that you are cooking that is taking so long? You're so hungry. Come, what is this happening? And Akbar went into the kitchen. And when he went into the kitchen, he saw this very strange mechanism. He saw that Akbar was standing on top of a high stool. And then there was a stove on the floor, burning very nicely, and then the pot was hung right up on the roof with a pulley system. So he had this nice, wonderful looking pulley system, everything, and the pot was right up on the roof, and the stove was right burning right at the floor. And Birbal was standing on the roof, standing on this high stool, and stirring the pot of pot. And Akbar was looking at him. What are you doing? Haven't you not cooked before? Don't you know the pot must be under fire so that you can cook? No, you can't cook. You just take some time only. No. What are you doing? You should put the pot on the fire. Then Birbal reminded the king. Look, you remember that time the yogi was standing in the water so far away the fire was burning? I'm sure this is near enough. I'm sure the pot will burn. I'm sure the rice will cook. So like this, Akbar then realized his misunderstanding and then awarded the yogi. So the point is, the sun is extremely powerful, extremely, giving us so much energy. There's one statistic or one calculation made by some scientists that the energy that is emanating from the sun for about 5 minutes is more than what human beings have consumed for the entire civilization. Entire modern civilization, I think. That is how much energy sun is producing. And all this energy is coming from where? It's coming from where? These questions are something that is pertinent, are something that is intelligent beings will ask. Why? Where is this coming from? The sun is revolving around the earth, and if the earth is just a few miles in front or a few miles further from the sun, there will be no life form on this earth. That is how precise the orbit of the Earth is. Why? How? How was this Earth designed in such a way? How was this universe designed in such a way? So all this questioning, when we question the workings of the universe, when we question the flowers blossoming, we question the sky, the rain, all these working, wondrous workings of nature, it just begets the question, why? Who is the engineer behind all this? Who is the brain behind all this? So this
is logical.
To accept, to understand that he comes supreme controller is logical. It's a logical thinking process. But who that person is a bit more difficult to accept. Now in this, Bhagavad Gita, just prior to this, we have heard this verse, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu. Krishna is declaring that controller, that brain behind this universe, that controller, the energy behind the sun is me. I am the cause of everything. Now how to understand, how to accept this? And we try and accept this through our own sensory perception. And that becomes a challenge. When Krishna is considered as all beauty, as all wealth, as all pain, all strength, all knowledge and all renunciation, we wonder, what do you mean by all knowledge? What do you mean by all strength? All strength. Very difficult to explain, but Krishna carries the Govardhan Hill with his little index finger of his left hand and carries them up for 7 days and seven nights. Okay. But what do you mean by all? It's a bit difficult to understand. It's a bit difficult to grasp. When you mean by all wealth, what do you mean by all wealth? Yeah, all the riches. Is he richer than you get? Oh yes, millions and millions of times richer. Millions and millions of times richer. The world has got so much money in. No. How to understand, how to grasp this point that it's all riches? It is very difficult because we are trying to grasp it by our own sense and perception. When you say all beauty, yes, the only beauty, thought of beauty we understand is when you see beauty pageants, you know, this world, this universe. When you see, the lady is very perfectly, the face is looking very nice, perfect, nice eyes, nice teeth, everything, looking very perfect. Krishna is easier to find more beautiful than this lady. Millions of times? Her eyes are looking very nice, though. This lady, this world, of this current, this world, is looking very nice. Eyes, her eyes, teeth, and everything. Millions of times more beautiful is Krishna. You got to be kidding me, right? It is very, very, very difficult. We are trying to understand all this through our own sensory perception. And that becomes a very big problem. And it becomes a little bit more challenging when we hear that this entire universe, everything in this entire universe, is actually a fragment of his body, of his energy. Fragment of his body, of his energy. Asama bahu naitena, singhyatena kabarjuna, ekabhyagam idam krishna, ekam tena sirojata. Ekam tena, just one fragment, I perceive and maintain this entire universe. One portion of it. How do we understand? How do we estimate? How do we quantify this? So our own sensory perception, it becomes very, very, very challenging. In fact, it is known as, it is called, is stated as impossible. In Mahabharata, in Bhishma Parvata, this quote is quoted many times in Prabhupada. This quote, Achindya Kalam Vibhavana Tam Tarkena Yajaya. That which is Achindya, that which is inconceivable, and inconceivable in the sense of Krishna, that which is inconceivable cannot be ascertained by argument. Cannot. And this point has to be appreciated. That by our own sensory perception, we are limiting ourselves. We limit ourselves to our own sensory perception, to our own experience, to our own conditioning in this material life. We limit our understanding and we try and understand the unlimited through our limited experience, through our limited conditioning, through our limited senses. And that is where the whole gist of the problem is. And it is not just now. Even when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, the problem was there. When Krishna visited the Mathura on the invitation of Kamsa, Krishna went down to Mathura and he saw this washerman. And the washerman had this understanding, or was proud of this understanding, that the Lord of Lords is Kamsa. And when the washerman was washing, busy washing and very nicely washing the clothes of the Kamsa, Krishna was walking past. And Krishna looked at the washerman and said, "My dear washerman, can you give me, you have very nice looking clothing. Can you give me some? I would like to wear them. Krishna personally personally was in front of him, Krishna personally was asking him, come, give it to me. And yet the watchman could not understand, could not see that there in front of him was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There in front of him, speaking to him directly, was the Supreme Personality of God. He could not understand. And yet what the watchman do? He say, hey, you young boy, get out. You do not know, this belongs to the king. King comes up. How can you say that you want this? How impudent, you impudent fool, get out. So this point that Krishna, acceptance of Krishna as a Supreme Person, was that problem was also there even when Krishna was personally present. Krishna was there personally present in Mahabharata war, in the Kurukshetra war, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Many millions of people saw him, and yet only a handful could understand that there stood the Supreme Personality of God. When we read Krishna Leela, we find that this hilarious account of King Paundrika. King Paundrika was one king of a state, and he claimed that I am Krishna. That this Krishna who is ruling Dwaraka is just imposter. That Krishna that who is ruling Dwaraka, who is considered a supreme person, who is considered most powerful all in all, is actually an imposter. He is just wearing some yellow garment, painted in some blue and all that. No, he is imposter. So what did Paundrika do? He wrote a letter. A challenge. Challenging Krishna. Look Krishna, you are an imposter. Give up this imposter. Your time of seeking public has ended. You are going to be exposed to. Please give up this, all these things. Declare that you have actually cheated the public for so long and all that. And Paundrika sent this letter and said, Krishna, if you do not want to give up all this, you come, challenge me to a fight. At this day, this time, you come to this place and I will challenge you to a fight. And in this fight, you will understand why you are considered imposter. So when Krishna received this message and when he read this message, he laughed. He laughed out loud. He laughed because here Krishna was personally present. Everybody could understand, the great, great yogis, the great, great transcendentalists, the great, great devotees could understand that here personally present on this earth was the Supreme Person Krishna, and yet there was another person who could dare tell the same Krishna that you are actually an imposter. Krishna said, yes, I will accept the challenge. Let me go and meet him. So at the stipulated time and date, they went to the place. And Krishna came on his chariot and got off the chariot. And there stood Paundrika, wearing nice yellow garment, painted himself blue. He had this gem which is supposed to signify the Kausubha gem. He had the Srivatsa mark also. He had a crown, everything, and on his arms he carried the Gada lotus, everything, even including the Sudarshan Chakra, something that looked like a Sudarshan Chakra. In our drama, we use CD and DVD. I don't know what they used at that time. So he had everything, and then he stood. And the description goes that he stood because he had all these things. He was standing a little clumsy, and he was standing, and then he came. Krishna, you are imposter. Look, I am here. I am the original, the real you. Now, you better give up everything. Krishna says, you know, you have seen these police encounters. You know what they will do? They will take hands up. Drop all your weapons. So similarly, Paundrika did that. Drop all your weapons. So Krishna says, okay, I'll drop everything. So you drop the Sudarshan Chakra. And Sudarshan Chakra, knowing the mind of the master very nicely, the Sudarshan Chakra went forward and cut off the head of Paundrika. And at that time, Paundrika, you know what you were doing? You're trying to leave. So this is the case. Even when Krishna was personally present here, we try and understand all this through our own sensory perception. We find it is very, very difficult. That it is not just by our own estimation, by our own understanding and speculation that we are able to understand all this. No. It has to be transmitted to us through proper authority. Through a spiritual master, through someone who has realized this truth, then we are able to appreciate, then we are able to understand. Sometimes this conditioning, it is just like, you say, this conditioning, we use our senses and try to understand it is something like the fog in the well. We try and estimate this Atlantic Ocean by estimating the size of the well. Oh, well, then condition, how big must it be? 1,000 times bigger? 10 times bigger? 3 times bigger? No, cannot be. Million times bigger? Not. So this fog in the well mentality should be given up. And in fact, what to speak of great Pantraka and the Vashame, even Lord Brahma was bewildered. When Krishna killed Agasura, the big snake python demon. So python demon was standing right in the road, right along the road, with his mouth wide open. So the Gopas ran inside, thinking it was a very nice big mountainous cave. And even then, they knew that something was fishy about this cave. This cave, because the fishy smell was coming up. So he was wondering, something is wrong. But never mind, Krishna is with us. So the Gopas went inside, and Krishna was wondering, why? These devotees, these Gopas have so much faith in me that they can just walk into this python demon, knowing that this could be a demon, most likely a demon. They just went in because they have so much trust in me, so much faith in me. How wonderful these devotees are. How much surrender these devotees are. So Krishna very easily disposed of this demon. And then after that they went off to a nice opening beside the Yamuna, very nice opening for lunch. So Lord Brahma was up there and he watched this entire incident. This Agasura, killing of Agasura, so wonderfully disposed of, so easily killed off. And Lord Brahma was, and then he saw this same Krishna was going and eating very nicely with his playmate. Who was sharing, they were sitting, the description is also very nice. Krishna was sitting in the center, all the friends were surrounding like a lotus flower. Krishna sitting right in the center of the lotus flower, Krishna was in the center, and all the others are like petals sitting around him. And Krishna was joking, they were all sharing food with each other. See, I have fruit, see, I have yogurt rice, see, I have tea, see, I have that. And everybody was sharing with each other, and Krishna was laughing and playing with each one of them, joking with them. So nicely he was doing. And Lord Brahma could not understand this. This same Lord Krishna, this Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is understood and whom I cannot approach very simply, I have to pray very hard. I have to. And Lord Brahma, when he was praying for knowledge to how to create this universe, he meditated for thousands of years. Then he got the knowledge and the blessings of Krishna. And so Krishna was sitting here playing as if some ordinary common person. How is this possible? Brahma was bewildered. And he had fought it. So his bewilderment was four times more. So much bewilderment was there. And Lord Brahma then decided, let me just test. Is this actually Krishna? Let me just test. This cannot be Krishna. Let me just test this. So what he did? So the boys were all sitting down there. The calves were all grazing just nearby. So Lord Brahma came. Quietly took all the crap and he took them away. And he gave them some tea. So at this time, when Krishna and the cowherd boys were eating and nicely enjoying themselves, the cowherd boys were wondering, I don't hear the crap anymore. I don't see the crap. Where are they? And Krishna said, Hey, wait. You all sit down here, enjoy your lunch. You all don't disturb yourself. I will go and bring them back. You know, I will do this. They must have just wandered off. Let me go and bring them. So Krishna walked away and he started looking for the cow. Krishna knew. But he just pretended. He just pretended for the pleasure of the devotees. He pretended and he walked away. And at that time, Lord Brahma was watching and he came and he took all the boys away. And he took all the boys and the cows away, hid them in a cave. When Krishna could not find the cow, he walked back and he could not find the boys. And he realized, oh, I'm in deep trouble now. I've lost the calf and I've lost the boy. Now all the mothers are going to come after me. Now all the cow men are going to come after me because the calves are eating only. What shall I do? And Krishna, what did he do? He expanded himself. He expanded himself into all the covered balls and all the calves. And this expansion is also very, very interesting because he expanded and he behaved, all the expansions behaved exactly like the original. Exactly. And how is that possible? Because Krishna is all knowledge. And Krishna is seated in everyone's heart, and Krishna knew what each and every person are. And expanded it, and all of that, and for one year, the boys went back home, went back to their mother, played with your mother, did everything with your mother and with your father, the crowds went back, everybody was acting and behaving, and there was no tinge of suspicion from anyone. Of course, except Lord Brahma, Lord Balaram, after a while, he realized something was fishy here. So he asked Krishna later on. But apart from that, nobody understood. And that is the inconceivable potency of Krishna. How he expanded in such a way that nobody could, that this missing children could not be found. And when Lord Brahma, when he walked back and he saw, okay, let's see how is this little boy who was playing with his boy, with his coward boy, how is he doing? And before, when he came back, he saw that all the boys were there, all the girls were also there. Lord Brahma could not understand this. Didn't I just leave all these boys, took all these boys and left them inside the cave? And they are here? No, they are there. No, they are here. How was this possible? Lord Brahma became so extremely confused. Extremely confused. So much so Bhagavatam says that he lost all knowledge. He just stood there frozen. He did not know what to do. He just stood there frozen. And Krishna, out of his thoughtless mercy, he showed, revealed this expansion of it. He revealed that all the boys, he revealed as four-headed form Vishnu. And when he saw that all the boys were actually extensions of Krishna, Lord Brahma immediately realized his mistake. Immediately realized that he had actually played with the wrong person. That he actually played with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That he tried his best to understand Krishna by his own sensory, by his own mental intelligence. But he realized that even though he could not do it so, that Krishna was beyond comprehension, was beyond our limited capacity to understand. And Krishna completely bewildered Brahma. And at that stage, Lord Brahma says this very nice prayer. Jnana prayasam upasat udapasya namanta eva jivan titan mukaritam bhavadiya vatam tane sita suti gatam tanuman mano ve he prayaso jito jito yasi sai trilokam. This first line is very, 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 very instructive. This first line, jnana prayasam udapasya namanta eva, that this process of understanding knowledge, jnana prayasam, trying to, this process of endeavoring for knowledge, it is not successful. It is not successful when it comes to the matters of Krishna. So therefore, from this example and from the prayers and the subsequent prayers of Lord Brahma, we understand that actually the best way and the only way to understand Krishna is to accept Him as the Supreme Person. Just accept Him. Just submissive acceptance that He is Krishna, and just submit and just accept the words of authority. Just accept the authoritative words from the scriptures that Krishna is the Supreme, this is how you are supposed to worship, this is what He is and all that. Then we find that we do not have so much problem. Then we find that he is actually very simple to accept. Just like a child, when he learns from the teacher, oh, 1 plus 1 is 2, 1 minus 1, 1 minus 1 is 2. If a child starts to question, why is that 2, why is this 2, why is that 2? He finds that he will ask so many why, he does not accept. Without accepting the teacher, he asks so many why. What happens? There's so much problem. And then what happens? The child will fail. But if the child simply accepted this, no problem. And the child actually understands this very much, because the father tells the child, you don't do this, you come here. And the child says, no, I don't want to come. What will happen? The father will take the cane and will beat the child. So the child understands this very nicely. I better listen to my father. I better listen to my mother. If my father and mother say, come here, I have to come. If not, I will get beaten. So this very immediate realization is there for the child. So similarly, our understanding should be like that. We should just accept the words of great sages like Narada, Atita, Deva, and Vyasa. We should just accept. When they say, here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when Lord Brahma, in his Brahma Samhita says, Ishvara Brahma Krishna, when he says that among all the controllers, Ishvara, the Supreme Controller, Parama, is Krishna. When you just accept that, there's no problem. When you start questioning why he is the Supreme, why is he that way, why is he, oh, he's all riches, all fame, all beauty, why is he all beauty? How is he all beauty? Is he 100 times richer than beauty? Is he 100 times richer? We try and quantify all this, we find that there's so much problem. There's so much confusion. Better to just accept. And that is the point which Arjuna is at now. That this submissive acceptance of the authority is very, very significant in this verse. That in the previous verse, Arjuna sorry. So Arjuna in this verse submissively accepted that you are, I totally accept that through whatever you told me. Because why? Because you, I accept as Krishna, the Supreme Person. And that comes to the second point of Parampara system. That this descending process of knowledge has the other characteristic of acceptance of authority. Now who is authority? This point is also important. That when we question as to who the authority is. Is he the correct person? And when we understand that this is the correct person, we just accept it. When the mother says this person is the father, we just accept because the mother has said so. When the father says this is the teacher, we just accept it because the father has said so. If someone else were to say this is the teacher, the teacher will teach you all this, you do not really accept it until your father will come to you and say, yes, yes, he's your teacher, please listen to me. Ah, okay, I will listen. So like this, our main questioning or our questioning should be whether this person or this scripture is actually authority, is actually based on authority. And we understand that this scriptures are also all talking about Krishna, are all speaking about Krishna, and it is certain by great acharyas like Narada. And that is the purpose of the previous verse. Arjuna has emphasized, established the fact that Krishna, you are the Supreme Person. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitra Parama Bhava. Arjuna has established this fact. And he has established the fact that any great sages, Narada, Atika, has also established this fact. And now you are also telling me. So he has established this point that Krishna is the authority. And therefore, in this verse, he says, now that I have accepted you as the Supreme Person, now that I have accepted you as authority, now whatever you have told me, I am accepting. And this submissive acceptance, you find that it has become very, very, very good. It has become very good for Arjuna. Because subsequently you find that Arjuna was able to defeat all the great warriors in the Mahabharata war. If you read the description of the Mahabharata war, you'll find that the Pandavas, The fight between the Pandavas and the Kauravas were almost like a fight between David and Goliath. The Pandavas being David. You have heard the story of David and Goliath? David and Goliath, David is a very small, very, very puny, very tiny looking boy, and he was pitted against Goliath, a big demon. This is a story. So why we say that? Because the Pandava army was, to use this term, Pandava army was made up of 7 divisions. And the Kaurava army was made up of 11 divisions. He was literally almost 1:2. 1:1.5. And then you find that when we say this division, actual term they use is Akshavini. And this definition or generic composition of Akshavini is like thousands of foot soldiers. Thousands of Maharajis. So like this, there are some generic composition. So Akshavini is a big number. One Akshavini is a big number of soldiers. So they have 7 Akshavini. Just like, you know, now military context, and you say brigade battalion division, normally you know that when you hear battalion worth of soldiers, you know it's about 150 people. We know, because that is the generic composition. Similarly, when they say 7 Apsha, we can roughly estimate the size. And then when you look at the soldiers, the Maharaji, the great warrior, he fight on the side of the Kaurava, there was Bhishma. There was Drona. Bhishma, he so expert a warrior that he has never been defeated before. He has never been defeated before. Such a great powerful warrior. He had Dronacharya, the teacher himself. He had Kripacharya, he had Karna. So many great warriors were there. And on the Pandava side, to put in the same league as all these warriors, was only Arjuna. Arjuna was the only one who was considered in the same league as the rest. Even the rest, like Dhritarashtra, was considered a not so powerful warrior. He was a brilliant strategist, but not so powerful warrior. And so many other warriors were there, but not as powerful as Arjuna. Arjuna was considered very powerful, and among the Pandava, no one else who could compare with the great warriors like Bhishma and Drona. No one was there. And he was really a lopsided battle. On paper, if you look at it on paper, you'll find that actually Kauravas were supposed to whitewash Pandavas. They were supposed to completely. He was almost a one-sided effect. He's supposed to be a one-sided effect. So what happened? What happened? Arjuna, because he submitted to Krishna, because he submissively accepted Krishna's word and Krishna's instruction, when Krishna says, Nirita Matam Bhava Savya Sachin, I have destroyed all these people, you just be my instrument. You just be my instrument. Just like, you know, you may have a knife and then you cut vegetables. You dictate, yes, I want to cut 1 inch long. You dictate and you cut, you will cut 1 inch long because you have dictated and the knife will follow exactly how you cut. When you want to cut the potato in the fork, you will cut the potato in the fork. The knife will not have a brain on its own and it cut the other way and cut the potato in the leaf. No. The knife will follow exactly how the wielder of the knife tells it to. Similarly, when Krishna tells Arjuna, you do this way, you fight in this way, you follow this my instruction, Arjuna follows to the point. He followed every single word to the letter. And what happened? Arjuna was ultimately victorious. He completely decimated the entire Kaurava army. Completely. We find in the whole Mahabharata war, there are many incidents. One of the incidents is when Arjuna, in one of the days, when Arjuna heard that his son Abhimanyu was killed, he made a terrible vow that the next day I will kill Dhritarashtra. And he made this vow knowing that on the other side there was Drona, Kripa, Karna, all these great warriors still present. And if we have to execute or fulfill this vow, we have to go past all these great warriors. All these great warriors is to go past and then he's able to kill Dhritarashtra. And yet he made this vow. Why? Because he knew that Krishna was by his side. He knew. He had this faith that Krishna was by his side and Krishna would direct him. Direct him accordingly to achieve that goal. And even if he wasn't able to achieve, he knew that Krishna was by his side. And that in itself was a great festival. That in itself was very significant. That in itself was enough for Arjuna, a great devotee like Arjuna. And what happened the next day, true enough, a great battle ensued. He completely single-handedly went against the entire Kaurava army. And just before sunset, he actually defeated and killed the other. This is the point. At the end of Mahabharata war, when Krishna and Arjuna came in the chariot and came to the resting place, to the place where all the people were staying. So when he came, and normally the etiquette is the charioteer Sarathi will get off first and he will ask the warrior to come down. That is the etiquette. Sometimes in National Day Parade we also see that the soldiers, the chief general will come and he will ask the president to go up, president to come here and all that kind of thing. Similarly, so the charioteer will tell the warrior to come down. In this case, Krishna says, no. You get off it. And Arjuna did not question. Arjuna was not wondering, oh, why is this? No, I దూసి నువ్వు మనువులు పైన ఒకటి కృష్ణ ఇంకో పట్ల తీసుకున్నా ఈ కం తీసుకున్నా నో 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 అర్జున ఇమీడియట్లీ ఓ కృష్ణ ఓకే ఆర్జునం ఎనీ గౌరవం అండ్ ఆఫ్టర్ అర్జున గాడ్ ఆఫ్ అండ్ వెన్ సార్ కృష్ణ గౌరవ్ అండ్ కృష్ణ గాడ్ ఆఫ్ ఎంటైర్ క్యారీ బర్న్ టు యాష్ అండ్ అర్జున కృష్ణ వాట్ హ్యాపెన్ వాట్ వాస్ దిస్ అండ్ అర్జున అండ్ కృష్ణ ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్ దట్ ఇన్ దిస్ బ్యాటల్ సో మెనీ అస్త్రాస్ వర్ థ్రోన్ అట్ యు సో మెనీ అస్త్రాస్ వర్ థ్రోన్ అట్ యు సో ఆల్ దిస్ అస్త్రాస్ డిడ్ నాట్ టేక్ ఎఫెక్ట్ Because I was present, this astra did not take effect. Now that battle is over, and if I leave the chariot first, because if I leave the chariot first, the astra will now take effect and burn the chariot. That is why I asked you to leave. So Krishna Arjuna accepted the word, and that is why Arjuna immediately stopped questioning his king. If Arjuna had questioned, no, why did you go after no anything, what would happen to Arjuna? He would have been burned in the fire. That is the point. Later on, when Ashwatthama released the Brahmastra weapon, what did Arjuna do? Arjuna could easily counteract. He knew how to counteract Brahmastra weapon. He knew he had to throw another Brahmastra. He knew how to throw. He knew everything. So what did he do? He put down all his arrow and bow. He put down the cloth. He just turned to Krishna. Krishna, please tell me what to do. He prayed to Krishna, please tell me what to do. He said, Brahmastra coming, Ashwatthama has thrown this Brahmastra, the Brahmastra is coming, what should I do? Krishna said, yes, you pick up the bow and arrow, and you throw another Brahmastra and counteract the Brahmastra. Yes, and he took and he did exactly how Krishna has mentioned. This is the point. He accepts submissively. Submissively inquire from the Lord, from the authority, and when the authority, when Krishna, the authority, says, this is the way to do. You accept the whole Arjuna and you execute it 100%. No deviation, no duplicity, no twisting the words, no. This is the point. So this subject matter, to understand Krishna, we find that to understand Krishna in this purport, Krishna Prabhupada has very clearly mentioned, to understand Krishna, the only purpose, the only way is actually to listen or to understand this from Parampara system. I.e. to say, you listen from the authority, from people who have realized this truth about Krishna being the Supreme Person. You listen from this, you hear from them, then you will be able to appreciate, you will be able to understand, you will be able to realize that Krishna is the Supreme Person in this body. This point is mentioned, or it is the purpose of this verse. And in Brahma Samhita, this word, Premanjana Surika Bhakti Vilochanena Dhata Sadaiva Hridayesh Vilokayanti Yam Shama Sundaram Achindya Gunaswarupam. That this Gunaswarupam, Achindya Gunaswarupam, inconceivable quality of Shama Sundaram cannot be understood very simply unless you realize it through the eyes of Bhakti. Unless you realize Premanjana Surika Bhakti Vilochanena, you anoint your eyes with the love of Bhakti, then you can realize this. Then you will be able to understand. Once you understand this, then once you have devotion and love and submission for Krishna, then you realize that Krishna is the Supreme. And this is the easiest and the best way to understand or to receive this transcendental knowledge. There is no other way. By our own sensory perception, there is no other way. As also mentioned in Brahma Samhita, Pantasukodi Saravatra Sambragamya, Vayu Ratapi Manasu Munipungavana. That even if you travel on an airplane, which is travelling at a speed of mind, still you will not be able to reach the limit of Govinda, of the qualities of Govinda. You will not be able to. So to try and understand by our own sensory perception, by our own mental speculation and deduction, is not the way to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unlimited, who is inconceivable, who is all in all, who is the source of everything. the best way is to learn from a Parampara system, is to learn from someone who has, you have to learn from someone who has realized it, who has imparted this knowledge to you. That is the only way by which you can gain this transcendental knowledge. Is there any question from me? If there are no questions, if you study the episode from pastime of nationalism, if you really study Hiranyakashipu and Pralhad Maharaj, when you study Hiranyakashipu, it's actually quite a brilliant book. When you talk about the administration of the universe, there are 33 million animals, all taking care of the administration of the universe. And Hiranyakashipu visited the entire animal planet, controlled all these animals, and the demigods were just becoming main servants for Hiranyakashipu. And what did Hiranyakashipu do? He was so intelligent, he was so brilliant, that he alone, one person, did the duty of all the 33 million. So that was how intelligent he was. And yet, because the Hiranyakashipu was working for his own senses, was working for his own sense pleasure, he realized that in the end, everything was frustrated. In the end, when Krishna, when he saw Prahlad so blissful, so nice, and he saw Prahlad that he could not control or destroy or change the mind of Prahlad, he became so frustrated because his own sensory enjoyment was being challenged. And ultimately, when he challenged Prahlad Maharaj, "You show me Krishna, you show me Vishnu, where is he?" When Prahlad said that here, Vishnu is in the pillar, Krishna appeared in the pillar to kill Hiranyakashipu. And Krishna appeared in the pillar not because he wanted to kill Hiranyakashipu, but because Prahlad said that he had seen in the pillar. So to prove the words of the devotee like Prahlad, that's the name of him. So this point, demons are actually quite intelligent, but because their focus on the intelligence, or the intelligence is diverted to their own sensory pleasure, that is why it is considered misguided intelligence. He uses, sometimes they use the word centrifugal knowledge. That means the knowledge is centered around ourselves. So all these kind of terms are there, and to understand the true purport of knowledge, in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, that the entire word and the purport is very instructive to understand. And that purport makes this point that true knowledge is something that many people can say that. Yes, it's 13 sections of job. And in what, and in the purport, Prabhupada mentioned the can't find it anywhere. So Prabhupada mentioned somewhere in the Prabhupada that the true knowledge, process of knowledge is to understand the Supreme Person. That should be the true purpose of knowledge. Anything that keeps us there is knowledge. Anything that does not is not considered knowledge. Okay. There's no other question. Jatrashma Bhagavad Gita ki. Anandamayi Vaishnava ki. Sai Gaura Prabhupada.